All right, Parshas Devarim. So we start the fifth book.
Fifth of five.
All right, what I'd like to do this morning, I'll give you a page number in a second. We're going to start on page, right in the beginning.
938.
So I'd like to do is I'd like to start with a relatively simple question and answer. Based on a comment of Rashi, and then we'll use that as a springboard to discuss a much larger issue and hopefully come to a nice new understanding of things. Alright, let's begin. So this fifth book, known as Sefer Devarim, is Moshe's farewell speech. It basically comprises the last several days of his life in which he instructs the Jewish people in various issues. There are over 200 commandments given in this book. 70 of which are new. So a large chunk of the commandments are on some level a repeat of that which has already previously been taught in one of these four other books. There are a vast number of new mitzvot. As well, there are various speeches, ideas, thoughts that Moshe gives over to the Jewish people. And it begins, this first parsha this week, with a rebuke in which Moshe, in a masked, veiled way, rebukes the Jewish people for various misdoings throughout their 40 years in the desert. And we'll just read maybe the first literally three or four verses just to get a sense of the beginning of this parasha. The Torah begins, Eile ha-devorim asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe spoke to all of Israel. These are the things Moshe is now speaking to the entirety of the Jewish people, Be'ever ha-yardein ba-midbar, on the other side of the Jordan in the wilderness. So we're right across, as we were last week also, right across from Jericho and the Jordan River, about to cross in. Jewish people are literally less than weeks away from their initial assault on the land of Israel to cross over the Jordan and take over the land. And Moshe is giving them their farewell speech. And then the Torah says, but he wasn't only in that location. The Torah gives us a long list of places that it seems that he was in. The Torah says he was Ba'arava, he was concerning Araba, Mul Suf, opposite the Sea of Reeds, Bein Paran, Uvein Toifel, the Lavan, the Chatzeros, the Dizav. You could just read it in English, it's a list of names. And the sages were bothered, he couldn't have been in all those places at the same time. And in fact, many of these places don't exist. There are no such places as what's listed here. So the sages explain, as Rashi mentioned, that this wasn't actually a reference to the places that Moshe was in when he was giving the Jewish people rebuke, but that he was actually hinting at all these various places where incidents took place over the last 40 years where they had done things that were wrong or inappropriate. And by hinting towards these names, each one of the names was a reference to a certain location or was a reference to a certain incident. So the book begins with Moshe rebuking the Jewish people in a masked way. Remember what happened with, and he'd say a catchword, oh yeah, I remember that. And don't forget what you did over there, oh yeah, I remember what happened over there. And so in so doing, Moshe basically summarizes 40 years of wrongdoings and misdeeds, hinting at each one, and that's in essence how the Torah begins this Parsha, this fifth book, and Moshe's speech and how he rebukes the Jewish people. Today's topic, I'm not interested in going through what each one of these is a reference to, though he who is interested or she who is interested can look either in Rashi or in the commentary. You will see here on the bottom of 939, they actually bring each one of the words that Moshe said and what was the reference to the incident that took place. But that's not for today's discussion. Verse 2, Pasuk Beis, continues with the list. Achad Asar Yom Mechorev, 11 days from Chorev. Har Seir, Har Kadesh Barnea, continuing the names of the places. And then we get to verse 3, Vayhi Ba'arboim Shana. This was in the 40th year. Vashrei Asar Chodesh, Be'achad L'Chodesh, on the first of the, in the 11th month, on the first of the month. Kash Diber Moshe, B'nei Yisrael, that Moshe said these things to the Jewish people as all that Hashem had commanded him. That's the end of our inside textual reading. So again, the first two verses are a list of places. Each one of the places is a reference to some form of rebuke that Moshe is giving the Jewish people. And then the Torah says, and these are the words that Hashem spoke to Moshe. Moshe is saying over all of these things, Ka'asher tziva Hashem oso aleihem. That's the last phrase in verse 3, according to everything that Hashem commanded him to them. So just based on the end of Pasuk Gimel, where is Moshe getting this speech from? Who is he communicating? Whose will, whose words is Moshe communicating? So it's clear, the Pasuk says, Moshe is saying over the words that Hashem had commanded him to say. That seems pretty clear. So, as a springboard for our discussion, so I want to mention a Rashi. So Rashi says on verse 3, Pasuk Gimel, if you want to read it inside, I'll just read a couple of lines inside the Rashi. It's in the second column on page 938, Pasuk Gimel, on the phrase, Vayihi va'arba'im shana va'ashrei asar chodesh. On the phrase in which the Torah described that this speech was taking place in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of that month. So this is at the end of their sojourn, right before Moshe's death. That's where this discussion took place. Rashi mentions in the Lamed, why does the Torah tell us that this was taking place at the end of the 40th year, in the 11th month, right at the end of the 40th year? To teach us that Moshe only gave this rebuke towards the end of his life. He waited. These were incidents which had taken place, some of them 40 years before. Why does Moshe first give the Jewish people a hint about, remember what you did with the golden calf? Remember that? That was 40 years ago, Moshe. Now you're giving us a hint? So Rashi says, yeah. Because he waited till right before his death to rebuke the Jewish people on all of these incidents. From where did Moshe learn this tactic of waiting to give rebuke until right before a person passes on? So Rashi quotes me Yaakov. He learned it from his forefather Yaakov, Jacob, who also gathered his sons at the end of the first of the five books, at the end of Sefer Bereishis. Yaakov gathers his 12 sons around him, and he says to each one of them what they need to hear. Most of them are often statements of rebuke about things that had been done wrong. Excuse me. So just like Yaakov rebuked his children right before his death, Moshe learned the same skill, and he waited till the end of the 40 years to rebuke the Jewish people. Just like Yaakov had said to his son Reuven, I'm only saying this to you at the end, Yaakov says, I'm afraid, Reuven, if I would have rebuked you earlier, you would have rejected me, and you would have followed after my brother Esav. So I didn't want to rebuke you too early in life. I didn't want to risk that you would leave my home, that you would leave the teachings, and you would end up with Esav, so I waited till the very end. So too, Moshe waited to the very end, and the sages quote, there are four reasons, in fact, why a person should wait till they die, right before they die, before rebuking. One, in order not to embarrass the person, that they shouldn't always be seeing you who gave them the rebuke, in order that you shouldn't find yourself rebuking them, rebuking again, and then rebuking again. Two, the sages say various reasons. But in any case, Moshe waits till the end. A very simple question, which I think will allow for a very simple answer, but the question would be posed as follows. It seems clear that Moshe made the decision where and how to rebuke the Jewish people. Rashi is quoting it very clearly. Moshe learned from his forefather Jacob and said, this is the process that we put into place when we rebuke. On the other hand, from where did Moshe get this command to rebuke the Jewish people? The verse says clearly, Moshe said over all of the words that Hashem had told him, which creates a little bit of an odd situation, which Hashem had clearly at some point told Moshe to rebuke the Jewish people, and yet it seems to have been left up to Moshe to decide when to do it, which is not the normal procedure when a prophet is given a vision from God. It's not up to the prophet to decide when to administer and deliver the message. Yet it seems pretty clear here that the message given over, the Torah says clearly, was according to the words that Hashem told Moshe. So the content was divinely inspired. The timing is pretty clear. It was chosen by Moshe, and he learned from Yaakov, and he decided the best time to give the rebuke would be at the end of his life. How does that work in the nature of prophecy that it was left up to the prophet? So the simple answer is, this is the nature of the prophecy, that this is what we have here. In other words, this is a unique incident of prophecy in which it was divinely inspired and yet uniquely given over to Moshe to determine when to say it. As if God gave the prophecy to Moshe and said, you give it, deliver the message when you see fit. Now, we could leave it at that. Sort of like answering the question with, well, that's what it is. It's not a real answer, right? it's sort of a real answer, but it doesn't fully answer the question, because it just really is going to be a springboard for what I'd like to scratch the surface of, the entire nature of this fifth book of Sefer Devarim. How do we understand? It's clearly a different type of book than the first four. There are various instances in which we see that, primarily in which Moshe seems to be the speaker throughout the entire book. Moshe says, I did this, I said that. In almost all of the other books, it's always an objective party speaking about Moshe. But Moshe clearly has a different role in his speaking parts in this book. And the other major question that we have to address is the concept of this repetition. As I mentioned earlier, there are 200 commandments given in this book. 130 of them are on some level a repetition of that which was already taught. 70 are new, 130 are repeated. What is the nature of a book? Who decided? How was it chosen? Which ones should be repeated? Which ones should get further clarification? Which ones are going to be new, only given in this book? And Moshe being a different quality of a speaker, what is the nature of the prophecy of this fifth book? How is it different than the first four? And just as that springboard, as you see, clearly there was some level of Moshe's input. He decided when to deliver this prophecy, even though it was on some level divinely inspired. Those are the questions which are tackled by almost all of the commentators in trying to understand the nature of this book. And I'd like to do a little bit. We'll start. This will not be all inclusive, but we'll start with a little bit of some of the opinions. So what I want to do is I'd like to do a Ramban, and time permitting, we'll do a little Maharal. The Ramban is on your sheets. So what I did is I photocopied for you the initial original Hebrew, and I photocopied a translation of that as well. I hope it's large enough to be able to read. So I'm gonna read most of it in Hebrew, and you can follow along in the English, you can follow along in the Hebrew, whichever way you feel more comfortable. But we'll tackle some of the issues. Some of the issues that the Ramban will address, and some of the issues the Maharal will address, but hopefully, as a whole, we'll get a picture and understanding as to the nature of this fifth book of the Chodesh. Okay, says the Ramban as follows. HaSefer HaZeh, Hinyano Yadua Shu Mishneh Torah. This book, is known as the Mishneh Torah, which is often explained or translated as a review of the Torah. That's how the sages referred to this fifth book. Mishneh Torah, a review, a going over of the Torah. And the reason why it's called a review is because, after all, there are 130 mitzvahs in here, which are already stated, which are reviewed. Usually when a mitzvah is repeated in this book, there's some level of something new involved. It's almost never repeated verbatim with no element of teaching involved. There's something new, which means that it wasn't entirely, completely taught, at least in the Torah before, and then it's repeated, and therefore the sages refer to it as the Mishneh Torah. Now, the Ramban, we'll see in his language, is going to be answering questions without ever asking them. In his explanation, which is why his explanation is always so rich, he's going to be addressing questions without ever having asked them as he answered them in his commentary. So says the Ramban as follows. In this book, Yivaer bo Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe explains, Ledor hanichnas bo'oretz, to the generation that's entering into the land, Rov mitzvot hatzrichos liYisrael. Most of the mitzvot that they need as they enter into the land of Israel. So the first thing that he says is there's a theme here. Which ones are going to be the mitzvahs repeated? Those which are most necessary for their entry into the land of Israel. Because we're right on that threshold. We're standing on the Jordan River, about to enter in. Which are going to be the primary mitzvahs that Moshe decides to repeat over here? They're going to be the mitzvahs which are necessary for life in Eretz Yisrael. Now, I'm going to ask a question that the Ramban doesn't ask. But just when we read it, you'll see what he's answering. If we were to go through the entire book, we will find that we do not have any mitzvahs repeated from Sefer Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra, the book of Leviticus, is the book which was focused primarily on the service of the priests and the Levites in the temple with the sacrifices. Those mitzvahs are left out. They're not repeated. Now, the Ramban is in essence about to ask a question. If the theme that runs through this book are the mitzvahs required of the people to be able to live, dwell, and settle the land of Israel, because that's what we're about to do, and they need to be reminded of all of those and elaborated upon, one would have thought that the sacrifice in the temple would have been primary amongst the list of mitzvahs that need to be gone over, because that's only relevant to the land of Israel, and we should know how to do that. So the Ramban is bothered by the fact that those mitzvahs are not at all included. Only mitzvahs relevant to Jews, Yisraelim, not priests or Levites, are included in this entire book of repetition. Says the Ramban, isn't that interesting? Why should that be true if the theme is preparation for the land of Israel? Says the Ramban, a beautiful teretz, a beautiful answer. The Lo Yaski Vodovar, the Teretz Kehanim, nothing was mentioned in all of Sefer Vayikra, in all of the book of the priests. Well, we might say HaKarbonos, nothing to do with sacrifices, nothing to do with the ritual purity or impurity of the priests. None of that was necessary. Shikfar Bir Osam Lahem, because that had already been explained to them. The HaKohanim Zerizim Heim. Kohanim, they, how did, what word does he use to translate? Are zealous in their performance. They are diligent. They are with alacrity wanting to do everything. So you said it to the priest once 35 years ago at the beginning of your 40 years life. Don't worry about it.
It's a given.
They got it. They got it. They're good to go. They've been handing it down generation to generation, going over it. They're ready. They don't need a warning after another warning. You tell a child, remember, we're leaving to go to school in 10 minutes. We're going to have to tell them again 8 minutes, and then we're leaving in 6 minutes. You got to get them dressed. We got to get them ready to go. They're not interested in doing what they're about to do. So it's a constant, you know, going over and reminding of what the process is going to be. But if you tell the child, remember going out to ice cream in 5 minutes, that's it. You don't have to say it again. They're there. They're waiting at the door already in 10 seconds. Says the Ramban, the Kohanim have that midah, the trait. In the Jewish people, the service of God for which they have been so dedicated, don't worry. I'll be Israel. But the masses of people, the regular Jews, those amongst us who are not in the families of the priests and the Levites, Yachzir HaMitzvos HaNehagos, we have a chazara, we have a repetition of the mitzvahs which are relevant to us. Pam Lahoisif Bahambir, sometimes it's just to further elaborate on the mitzvah. Remember, I explained this to you once, but let me just give you some more details, some more explanation. Pam Shalo Yachzir Son Rakla Hasir Sishobra, sometimes it's just to warn you. So that the Ramban comments of the mitzvahs that are repeated, they're all repeated to the Yisraelim, they're all repeated only to the tribes, the Israelite tribes. Sometimes it's to increase a beer, sometimes it's to increase an explanation, and sometimes it's just, this is really significant. For example, Shabbos is repeated, I think it's 11 different times in the Torah. The Torah warns us against violating Shabbos. So says the Ramban, it's just a repetition of the same phrase. Don't do any work on the day of Sabbath. No added explanation, just again, and then again, and then a couple of verses and chapters later again, just to let you know, how do you know what's really important to our parents? How do we know which things are really important? It's the ones that we hear a lot. The ones which we get once or twice, so, you know, we have, as children, we filter them in, okay? But the ones that we hear, we know. So says the Ramban, some of the repetitions are to help explain things to us, and sometimes it's simply to let us know how significant it is in the eyes of Hashem. As you find, and he brings an example of, for example, idol worship and certain transgressions. Okay. Now, the Ramban continues, and he says, that's point A. That's step A. The theme running through is preparation for the land of Israel. The decision in which ones preparing us for the land of Israel are we given has to do with priests are the reason. They work with alacrity. They're excited. They're diligent. Don't worry about them. It's the Israelis who need the warnings either as additional explanation or as further warnings or further explanation. Now, what do we do with all the new mitzvos? The Ramban is bothered by another question, which again he doesn't formally ask. There are 70 new mitzvos given. Now, quick mathematicians, mathematical calculations. Where are we right now following the Exodus from Egypt? How many years?
40.
Excellent. That's what we said explicitly. How many years before this was the standing of the Jewish people at Har Sinai and the giving of the Torah?
40.
That was given, right? 7 weeks after we left Egypt. Counted 7 weeks. The Yontif of Shavuos, commemorating the giving of the Torah. So it has now been 40 complete years that we've been in the desert. 40 complete years with our teacher Moshe, doing nothing in the desert other than studying the words of Torah as taught by Moshe. 40-year incubation period of the Jewish people to absorb all of this information. 70 new mitzvahs are taught in the last 3 or 4 days of the Torah. Question. Huh? What happened? Did they forget? How do we explain that? How do we explain any new mitzvah which is taught in this book, which is being taught in the 11th month of the 40th year of the Jewish people's stay in the desert? What's gone on for the previous 40 years? Pretty powerful question.
Just to stay fresh.
If it would be to stay fresh, then I would say, so instead of only repeating 130 mitzvahs, let's repeat 200 mitzvahs. Like, once we're repeating 130 already, and that would keep us fresh, remember this, remember that. So repeat all 200. How can it be that there are 70 new mitzvahs taught in this book, which is being taught in the 11th month of the 40th year in the desert? Yeah.
I think they either have to be the hardest mitzvahs, or they have to be the opposite side. Either ones that people are going to like... One way or the other.
But it's still a difficult concept if you just take it at face value that they weren't taught them ever. It's like hard to imagine, yeah.
Maybe because of the way they lived in the desert, these mitzvahs were necessary because of the choices they made during the 40 years in the desert.
As a response to some of the things that they had done. Mm-hmm. Cool, but let's take a look at how the Ramban addresses this. Let's take a look at the Ramban. Okay, start with the phrase additionally, for those following in English, after that little break in the one. So, Od Yosef Bazeh HaSefer, Tzatz Mitzvah Shalom Nizkeru Klal, begin the second paragraph on the Hebrew side. There are new mitzvahs that have never been mentioned. Hayibum, how do you pronounce that?
Kowad.
Yeah, the Levirate, when a man dies without any children, so his...
Levirate.
The Levirate marriage, Avdin HaMotzi Shemra, concerning the defamation of a bride, that if a husband would walk into court the following morning and say, I don't know, I thought I was marrying a woman who had never been married before, and it turns out that she hadn't been married before, there's a whole process in the Torah, how do we handle that? Geirush and Beisha, the concept of divorce, is first introduced in this book of Devarim. And various other mitzvahs. Says the Ramban, Kfar Nemru lo kulon b'Sinai o b'oy ha-moed b'shona ha-rishona kodem ha-miraglim. There is no question that Moshe himself for sure had been taught all of these mitzvahs earlier. No question, says the Ramban. They were taught at Har-Sinai during that first year before the spies were sent out. Moshe received the entirety of the Torah in all of its detail. We will find that in this place where they are right now, Arvos Moav, in the plains of Moav, nothing new was said to Moshe. To Moshe, nothing new was said. Al Kain lo nemar b'sefer hazeh va'idaber Hashem el Moshe leimor tzavas b'nei Yisrael. That's why you will never find in this book the phrase, and Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, go command the Jewish people, because that would imply this is something new being taught to Moshe, and he's now supposed to... Never, says the Ramban, there is nothing new to Moshe actually being taught here. Oh, Dabro b'nei Yisrael, or you don't have the phrase of go talk to the Jewish people, you don't have that phrase. Now, that tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu himself then got everything previously. That's clear, the Ramban is saying, without question, Moshe received then how come the Jewish people weren't giving it earlier? So to that, the Ramban suggests, why were they not said to the previous generation? And here the Ravan is already hinting at his answer. There is a very important distinction between the first 40 years and where we are now as to who is Moshe talking to. Because if you remember, we've mentioned many times, the entire generation that left Mitzrayim, those who were from the ages of 20 to 60, did not survive. They did not lived through the desert. They were all punished because of the sin of the spies. And therefore, anyone who is of age between 20 and 60 isn't being spoken to right now. Which means that we could already give a hint to an answer that anything which would have been said to them would never have been taken by them into the land of Israel. Because what they were going to deal with was only going to be life in the desert. That generation wasn't going to make it in. So the people to whom Moshe is speaking now are the people who are actually now going to enter in, says the Ramban. And the reason why they were not set over in the previous books, and he throws in that phrase, to the generation that left Mitzrayim, ki ulai, maybe, he says perhaps, lo nohagu ba'osan ha-mitzvahs rak ba'aretz. very possible, says the Ramban, that these are all mitzvahs which would only be applicable in the land of Israel. That the 70, which, now this is why he says, because who says divorce didn't apply in the desert? And divorce is one of the mitzvahs which are only taught in this book. The Levirate marriage also. So the Ramban suggests it's possible, just looking at the facts in front of me, he says, that they were only taught to the generation about to enter in, and they were not taught to a generation that had the death decreed upon it in the desert. It's possible that that you could suggest that these mitzvahs would actually not have applied in the desert, only when they entered into the land of Israel, even though they are incumbent upon a person no matter where he is. Now, that's a big novel statement to say, that some of the mitzvahs would not have applied until they actually entered into the land of Israel. But that's the suggestion that the Ramban is making with a very difficult problem in front of him of why was a generation that died off not taught these mitzvahs? So he said, it's possible that it wouldn't apply in the desert. And that these mitzvahs which Moshe waited to teach the Jewish people until this point, for whatever reason was divinely decreed, should not be relevant in the desert, and they only apply to the generation about to land into the land of Israel. That's his first suggestion, which is a tremendous chiddush, a very novel idea, but one suggestion. He gives a second suggestion. Oh, it's also possible, he says, that Nesha Einan Tediros, Lo Hizkirak Bebanim Nochle Aras, because they were not common occurrence. It was only taught to the generation who was about to enter into the land who would have to deal with it much more. But that since these were not the common things, so he didn't spend the time teaching that whole generation. If it were to come up, they would ask him and he would deal with it, but he didn't feel it necessary to teach the entire generation these laws since it wasn't all that much of a common occurrence, and therefore he saved it until they actually entered into the land. Two fascinating suggestions to deal with a very major problem. Problem will still be on the table. That's the question. Why were these mitzvahs delayed until the actual generation walked in? So he gives two suggestions in Ramban, either because they might not have applied well in the desert, or possibly because they weren't common enough to burden the people who weren't going to enter into land of Israel with them, so he waited until the end. The two fascinating ideas. So far what the Ramban has set up for us is the idea that Moshe only goes over mitzvahs which are relevant to the land of Israel, only goes over mitzvahs which are relevant to regular Yisraelim Jews, not to the priesthood, to the Levites, because they are for sure holding whatever they need to be holding in. The choice as to why are these new mitzvahs given here and not any earlier are not because Moshe was first taught them at this point. There is no question, says the Ramban, that Moshe had been taught them together with the rest of the Torah earlier. He made the decision not to teach it, either because it wasn't relevant to the people who were going to die off in the desert, or because it wasn't common enough. But it was his decision to wait on teaching them, to give the rebuke to the end, and that's how we have this book of Devarim. The Ramban concludes, I want to read it inside, the Ramban concludes with an idea, why does Moshe begin this entire speech with rebuke? Why does he begin that with all of these veiled references to things which the Jewish people have done incorrectly, and mistakes that they've made throughout their journey in the desert? So the Ramban says, in order to teach us that Hashem always deals with us the midas harachamim, always deals with us mercifully, that we should know the kindness that He does, in order that we should know, as we're about to enter into the land of Israel, that we shouldn't say, shelo yoimar adam lo nucha lareshes es haaretz, we can't go in. How are we possibly going to enter into the land of Israel? Ki ein adam asher lo yechata. We can't be perfect human beings. Here you have a Jewish people standing on the brink of the Jordan River, ready to go in. And says Moshe, you know what I fear? I fear they're going to say to themselves, this is an impossible task. We are all survivors of a generation that didn't make it, right? All of our parents are no longer here. They all died out. Every single one of us who is standing here today is orphaned because our fathers sinned in the desert, they accepted the report of the spies, the death was decreed upon them, and now we're going in.
The spies, that came much, much later. That not while they were in the desert, but before they were to enter the promised land.
Right, but that was 40 years earlier. It was in their first year in the desert they sent out the spies, because they were supposed to go right immediately into the land of Israel, and they decided to send the spies. That was 40 years before. Now they've been wanting. So Moshe says, you know what, this generation who I'm speaking to now, Jonathan, they're going to think, we can't do this. It was this. Look at the harsh treatment we got when we were in the desert. We hadn't entered into Hashem's house yet. What's going to be now when we enter into the land? Asher Einei Hashem Batamid, that the eyes of God are always looking at the land of Israel. I think we discussed in this class previous times how the Moshe uses the phrase, the land will vomit out its inhabitants, those who can't adhere to the laws. They're going to say, it's impossible. We're human beings. We're going to fall short. We're going to fail. We're going to sin. We're going to be wiped out. So says Moshe, the first thing I'm going to tell this new generation on the banks of the Jordan River about to cross over is you need to know, Hodiya Moshe Rabbeinu Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rachamon Mole Rachamin. It's a merciful God, full of compassion. Ki Haslicha V'Hamachila Mimenu Yisparach Siyuva Ve'ezel Levnei Odom Ve'Avodoso. And that his forgiveness and pardon will always be an assistance and a help to his children in their service of him. Ki imcha haslicha, I will always forgive in order that you may continue to fear me. So that the first speech that Moshe gives to the Jewish people is, rebuke, but you're still here. Rebuke, but you need to know after all of that, even after all of these things that were done wrong, look at this list. There are 11, 12 things in this list of the shortcomings of the Jewish people. Jewish people will always survive. There always is an overriding sense of mercy and compassion from Hashem that you need to know as you take in with you to this land that, yeah, of course, you're human and you're not going to be perfect. There will be shortcomings and there will be pitfalls and there will be mistakes made along the way. But you need to know you are God's children and a father always acts with compassion and with mercy. And it's the first lesson that the Jewish people take in with them. And that's why this book, which is Moshe's farewell speech, begins with this rebuke, in the sense that, yes, these things have gone wrong, but now he's going to take us in and remember that trait. That's the Ramban. This is his Hakdama. This is his introduction to the book. This is not on any particular verse. This is just the Ramban to, I think, all five of the books, right? It's a little introduction. And this is his introduction to this particular Sefer. So in which he's taught us the theme, going into the land of Israel, and he's taught us why these specific mitzvahs were taught, only those which are relevant to the Yisraelim, and not to the Kohanim, nor the Levian. Okay. Now, what I'd like to share with you is a Maharal. Maharal is a very difficult concept that I have tried my best to understand, and I will only be able to say it over as clearly as my understanding of it goes. So if it comes out unclear, that's because I have a little bit of lack of clarity myself. The Maharal addresses a following statement in the sages in his understanding of the nature of his book. Same basic concept that he wants to address as the Ramban did. The sages make the following statement, very perplexing statement in Maseches Megillah. They say as follows, there are two admonitions, two sets of curses that are given in the Torah. One is in Sefer Vayikra, the third of the five books, and one is in the end of Sefer Devarim. So the sages say, Klolol Shevetayros Kohanim, the series of curses that were given in the Torah, if you do this, you'll be cursed. If you do that, you'll be cursed. That whole series that was given in Sefer Vayikra, Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nemru, that was said by Hashem. The Halalu, and the curses which were said at the end of Sefer Dvarim, Moshe Mipi Atzmo Amron. Moshe said them himself. Difficult statement. That the Sefer Vayikra, those series of curses were said by Hashem, and the series of curses said in this book of Devarim were said by Moshe himself. Now, we know that the author of the Torah is Hashem from beginning to end. But what this statement is doing is it's touching upon this question of what is the nature of this fifth book of Devarim. How do we understand this book, in which we have the question we started off with, that there was clearly a prophecy given to Moshe to rebuke the Jewish people, yet he had the choice as to when to deliver it. We never have a command of Moshe to speak to the Jewish people. It seems like Moshe is doing the talking. He is the speaker of this book. What is the nature of this book? And that's all encompassed in the statement of the sages who say, yeah, sure, Sefer Vayikra, that was said by Hashem, but this book, that was said by Moshe himself. What does that mean? So the Maral explains as follows, and his opening line is, Eina kavana v'zechas v'sholom. There is no intention, heaven forbid, sheyoymar Moshe Dibra Mipiyah. That Moshe said anything on himself. That's not what the sages mean, because ois achas, not a single letter was said by Moshe without being dictated by Hashem's Torah. So then how do we explain this? He explains as follows. This really needs a lot more time and greater clarity, but you're sort of stuck with me in the little amount of time that you have, so we'll do it as best we can. The sages say that nothing compares to seeing. The ability to see is far greater than the ability to hear, so that a judge witnessing a case, sitting in trial over a case, if he were to see the actual transgression or to see the transaction, he then certainly wouldn't need to hear it from witnesses because his seeing it is so much greater than his hearing. Philosophically speaking, why is it so much greater to actually see something yourself than it is to hear it? So I want to bring in an explanation that I heard from Akiva Tatz. He wasn't saying it on this particular Maharal, but I want to bring in that explanation to try to explain how the Maharal is explaining this. When you see something, what you see is the entirety of a picture altogether in one shot. You look at a picture, and you see the whole thing all at once. You got the entirety of the picture. And you are simply taking in that which it is that you see. When you hear something, the ability to hear requires a very active role from the person who's doing the listening, taking the words of the speaker, pieces at a time, word by word, sound by sound, interpreting them and making sense of them as they come. So that you want to give me a message, I don't hear the message in its entirety. I hear it's a three-sentence message. I have to listen as you say each sound in each word, take it in, and then interpret as I'm hearing it what it is that you're saying. As we all know from our experience, I can say one thing and it's heard entirely different by three people, because in order to hear something, not just to hear the words physically, to hear what's being said, it requires a very active interpretation on the part of the listener to take in the words, and you must take them in one at a time. As they come, you hear what I'm saying. But you have no idea, as I've started the sentence, how I'm going to finish it. You have to just take that in. But when you see the picture, there it is. So when I see the incident in front of me, it doesn't require that level of interpretation. But when you hear, it does. Now, because of that very simple reality of communication, the person who's speaking knows what it is that he wants to say well before he started to say it. And it was, I have it written down or in my head. This is the message that I want to get across. This is what I want to say, and here I go. The listener does not have that until the end. I don't know what your message is, even though the level of my giving it over might be on whatever level that I want it to be. You don't hear that until you have heard the entire thing, interpreted it, and understood what it is that you wanted me to say. So, for example, let's say if you've ever been in a class, obviously not in this class, but in another class with a highly intelligent scholar who says something, and you hear him, like, I didn't understand a word he just said. I heard the whole message. The person who was speaking clearly understood what he was saying, clearly had a message to give. I heard the words, and I didn't get it. Say it again. And I'll say it again, maybe add a little bit of explanation, say it a third time, and then there's that, aha, I got it. I know what you're saying. And there's a progression of understanding of depth of what it is that's being said. When you're talking, when you're listening to someone who's speaking on a high level, be it in depth in Torah or in any subject, in which the speaker is talking on a level that they understand. They are using words that make a lot of sense to them, and the listener isn't at that level. They're struggling to grasp the words, and so they're hearing them one at a time, interpreting, struggling. They need to hear them, and then a second time, until they finally get it. So that if you were to transcribe what took place, if you were to transcribe it from the speaker's perspective, you would write out two sentences. If you were to then write out from the listener's interpretation of what was said, you would have two pages. And this is a very common thing in which you have a text in which this is what it says, be it text from Chumash, from prophets, or from a secular source, a poem. Right? Take a simple example of a poem. Three lines. And then you have a page explaining the meaning. So the person who wrote it, the author, had that all in those three lines. He understood what he wanted to say, how he wanted to write it, and it's all encompassed there as he wrote it. The listener, I need explanation and interpretation. So far, so good? So, if I understand this correctly, the Maral says, whenever you have that, the Torah is said over from the Bechina, from the perspective of Hashem, the speaker. This is God talking and communicating His will as His will is understood. As His will wants to be expressed. And therefore, the Torah is given directly from Hashem through Moshe, through God's understanding, through the understanding of the speaker, so that the words transcribed by Moshe are the poet's perspective on his prose. This is it's all there. You need 15 tractates to explain these first two verses. Well, that's not because I didn't have that all understood in the first. This is my perspective, my interpretation of all that I mean to say. That's how the Torah was given. God, through Moshe, the sages use the phrase, when Moshe would open up his mouth, the voice of Hashem would come out of his throat. Moshe was simply communicating that which God wanted him to say, wanted him to write, and wanted him to give over to the Jewish people. Says the Maharal, at the end of the conversation, the listener can take, interpret, and understand what it is that's being said. I'm going to parenthetically just say one thing that I wanted to say earlier. The famous pasuk, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What does it mean, Shema Yisrael? Listen, O Israel. Hashem is just telling us, like, listen up, like, pay attention. Of course, we could hear. Shema Yisrael, hear. Jewish people out there, hear what's being said. Take the words, interpret, understand, make meaning of it. More than just hearing the words, you need to be a shema, you need to be a shomei, you need to hear them, which means to interpret, to take that which is around you and make sense of it. That process of making sense of it, that happens at the end, and the Maral explains this book of Devarim, this Mishneh Torah, is then Moshe explaining to the Jewish people as an interpreter, on their level, not coming from a divine level in which he's simply focused, he's the throat of God, so to speak. He is now talking to the Jewish people, giving us the explanation that we need on our level. It's a one of us, as a listener, explaining to us on that level, well, this is what's being said. So you could read the poetry, and you don't get it, and then the teacher explains to you, oh, that I get, now that you explain it. This is Moshe coming down to the listener's level and explaining in his words the prophecy that he had received through Hashem on that level. So that when the sages say the first set of klolos, the first set of curses were God speaking, and this is Moshe speaking, not that it's chas v'sholom Moshe himself making up the curses, it's Moshe's interpretation of the prophecy. Similar, says the Maral, to all the prophets. When the prophets spoke, all the prophets that we've had in Jewish history, they would be given an inspiration, a prophecy. But when they would speak to the Jewish people, they were no longer under the divine spirit. They would then say over, in their words, the prophecy that they had received. Their understanding, interpretation of what it was that God had said to them. Moshe, in this book, was fulfilling that level of a role of a prophet, of saying over, from his perspective, that which God had given him.
So does God address the 70 mitzvahs that were not stated earlier?
No, and that would not be addressed. That would then still be, you have to go with something like what the Ramban suggested, why those 70 were chosen to be left out. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand, that would not address that.
Just the general theme of the book of Devarim.
Yes.
I think that earlier you had mentioned that this followed, like Yaakov also revealed at the
right.
end of his life. And it's very similar, it's analogous, because in a sense,
Yaakov knew the character of his children best at that point, and Moshe knew the character of his people best at this point. He had lived with them long enough.
Correct, exactly. That's exactly how it's explained. And therefore, the timing was most appropriately chosen by the person who was with the people as to where and how to say this. And then, so this was almost like the first instance of the oral law in which Moshe is helping to explain a lot of the Torah, except the difference here is that Hashem then commands Moshe to inscribe that as part of his Torah. So that it's not just a regular prophet, which is then a difference. You have Torah, and then we have the prophets, in which it didn't have this level of Torah. It was in which Hashem, so to speak, agreed with Moshe's interpretation and the way that Moshe said over the explanation of that which he had been given and incorporated that into the Torah itself, so that Moshe's speech, his interpretation of his prophecy, became Torah. Not because he was functioning in the same role as the first four books in which he opened up his mouth and the words of God came out. This was Moshe's words, Moshe saying over of his prophecy as he understood it on the level of the people telling over to them what they needed to hear, and then decided by God to be incorporated as his speech into the Torah, which then created a different level than the other books of the prophets to come later. Even though the words had been said in the same mechanism of a prophet saying over in his understanding the prophecy that he had been given. So that there is a distinction in this book in the way that the prophecy was said over, but Hashem made it and incorporated it as part of his Torah. And that's how the Maharal understands, I hope I said it over accurately, the distinction between the first four books in which it's said over from the perspective of Hashem, from his perspective, how he would understand it, and then we have all this oral law coming to try and explain it, versus this book which was said over in Moshe's words, already his understanding on the level of the people, what they need to hear to be able to understand it. And that was incorporated into the actual Torah, so that the first four books were already set on a higher level of prophecy than this particular book, even though Hashem incorporated it into the five books of the Chumash. That is my best understanding. I hope it is accurate of the Maharal's understanding of the nature of this book, based on the statement that Chazal say that the first set of curses in the book of Leviticus in Vayikra, Hashem said, and this is Moshe, we mean Moshe said, these aren't Moshe's, this is Moshe's interpretation of the prophecy that he had received, and the sages used the phrase of saying this is Moshe's words in saying that over. All right, I hope that was accurate, I hope that was clear, but that's
so
the story, yeah.
So say it was Moshe's words legitimized by by God.
Yeah. You should know there's a prohibition in the Torah of being a false prophet. A Navi Sheker. Literally a lying prophet. Such a prohibition in the Torah. So many commentators explain that doesn't mean, as we would often say, a person who gets up in the streets and said, God said to me, you no longer have to keep Shabbat. He's not a Navi Sheker. He's just a liar. He's just a fool. A Navi Sheker is a false prophet. Definition of a false prophet is somebody who receives prophecy and doesn't say it over accurately. Interprets it in a way that's not consistent with the message that Hashem was giving to him, but he allowed his own understandings and personal inclinations to affect that and say over something which wasn't accurate. So that there needs to be a certain stamp. This was all the prophets that we have had that, and here God gave it the stamp to put it in the Torah that yes, Moshe has said this over this prophecy which I have given him, and therefore it becomes incorporated into part of the Torah. All right, a wonderful day. Good afternoon.
Very nice.